So a lot of folks, I know when they first start out, that's kind of what they're using those drones for. They just kind of go and fly over a field to see if they see any sort of trouble spots. And the same thing with animals. If they're trying to find an animal, especially during calving season or something like that, they want to make sure that there aren't any animals in distress out in the field. And then kind of a level up from there are farmers that maybe are going to incorporate a sensor into their system, like the NDVI, NDRE type sensors that I was talking about before, to get a little bit better picture of what's going on, kind of see inside the plant a little bit better, to get a better picture of you know, any potential issues that may come up in the future.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible. A robust return on your sorghum investment is not just a dream. Learn more at doubleteamsorghum.com. KWS Hybrid Rye, seeding the future since 1856.
Welcome to the Crop Science Podcast Show by Wisenetics. I'm your host, Leo Bastos, Assistant Professor in Integrative Precision Agriculture at the University of Georgia. Today, we welcome our guest, Dr. Jason Dukoff. He's a professor and extension program leader at Tennessee State University. Jason, welcome to the Crop Science Podcast Show. It's great to have you here with us today. And to get us started, could you share with us your path and how you got to where you are today?
Well, thank you. I appreciate the invite and being a part of the podcast. So I guess we can start in undergrad. My major was in chemistry, and I thought I was destined to be a lab rat, just kind of working in the lab all the time and doing that kind of thing. But afterwards, I took kind of a year off and just kind of I had just a normal technician job and. I thought about what it was that I wanted to do. And so I got into environmental science and I went to UC Riverside. And in that program, they worked very closely with the soil science department. And so I was actually working for an advisor who did a lot with environmental soil science. And I really fell in love with soils and that kind of thing and the different complex processes that are there. And then so I transitioned into soil science, and for my PhD, I ended up taking that soil science and applying it to agriculture and agronomy. So I went to Purdue for that, and afterwards I got a postdoc with the USDA ARS, where I looked at different land use applications of different waste products, specifically in pasture systems. And then after that, I got a job with Tennessee State University, which is where I'm at today, specifically focused on agronomy and soils. But they were looking for somebody who was also going to focus on bioenergy crop production. And so that was a realm that I hadn't really worked in before, but it was something that was of interest to me. And so I got into that. And since then, you know, I've been doing extension. My major advisor at Purdue was an extension as well. So I really fell in love with that as well. And so, I've been focusing on different things related to technology in my extension programming ever since.
Awesome. And could you share with us a little bit about what are some of the current projects that you're working with? I know we're going to be talking some about, drone use and imagery in agriculture. And if you could tell us a little bit about how you've been applying those things in your projects, in your current projects.
Yeah, so we've been doing some different things. One of the things that I do research on is with winter canola as a potential crop that farmers can grow here in Tennessee. And that really kind of started out with some of the bioenergy work that I was doing, its potential use as a biodiesel. And so I've been collaborating with some other folks here at Tennessee State University looking at the difference between varieties with respect to things like NDVI, NDRE, and trying to relate some of those things potentially to yield that we see afterwards. And then I've got some, a large portion of my extension programming is really focused on talking to agents about drones and how they can use them to help farmers, how they can talk to farmers about drones and be able to help them in their farming operations. And then recently we've been getting into other things like, artificial intelligence and being able to help agents with that new area as well, with respect to how it can be incorporated into some of the things that they do on a daily basis to make things a little bit easier, for them as well.
So, you know, something that I think is really interesting around that topic is, at least on the research side, we know how useful and powerful drone remote sensing can be, right? It just gives you so much flexibility. You have all this data, especially collecting at, with the high frequency, with a very small pixel size, so all things that are really important for research. So I want to ask you, given that you work closely with the extension agents and they're helping farmers out there, what are some of the ways that you've seen farmers and the agents helping them to be using drones for helping them to become more efficient?
Yeah, so there's a lot of different ways that folks can incorporate drones into an ag system. Some of the real basic ways are just with crop scouting or monitoring animals, just being able to see what you see through the camera itself. So a lot of folks, I know when they first start out, that's kind of what they're using those drones for. They just kind of go and fly over a field to see if they see any sort of trouble spots. And the same thing with animals. If they're trying to find an animal, especially during calving season or something like that, they want to make sure that there aren't any animals in distress out in the field. And then kind of a level up from there are farmers that maybe are going to incorporate a sensor into their system, like the NDVI, NDRE type sensors that I was talking about before, to get a little bit better picture of what's going on, kind of see inside the plant a little bit better, to get a better picture of any potential issues that may come up in the future, that they're not seeing right now, just with the naked eye. So there's some different applications, there's some different software that folks can use, to be able to stitch those images together and then be able to do some basic analysis to create a map that they can use to identify, areas that are doing better from others.
Awesome. And so in the case of growers that are using, perhaps multispectral sensors that would then allow for NDVI and NDRE and other vegetation indices to be used, is that something that from what you've seen out in the field, is it something that the grower themselves do it, or is it the agent that helps them with that, or do they have yet another person that comes into play to really help with all that? Because we know it can get very complex, right? And so, who is the person that is actually doing that for the grower to then make a decision based on it?
Yeah, I think it's a whole range. I think there are some farmers who are out there that are interested in kind of doing it themselves and being able to learn the technology. There's a lot of farmers, that maybe are right out of college and they're working on the family farm and they really want to integrate some of this technology. And then, there's also probably a lot of our crop consultants have added this as kind of an additional tool to, the package that they already offer for farmers to be able to get additional information, for application purposes. I think there's probably a lot of that going on with respect to crop consultants being able to incorporate this new technology and be able to use it. I think on the agent side, there's some agents that are really interested in incorporating that technology and being able to use it as part of a site visit when they go out to a farmer. A farmer's got calls them up and they've got some issues out in the field. Being able to use that as an extra tool in their toolkit to apply and be able to get some additional information.
Awesome. That's really interesting to hear that. I on my own research, you know, I do use also drone and satellite remote sensing for assessing crop variability on the field and using that for management purposes. And one thing that I think is really interesting is, especially if you're working with a grower that either does not have yield monitor, or perhaps if the crop that they're working with doesn't even have a technology developed yet, It's really cool to be able to show them that spatial and temporal variability, right, on their field.
Yeah.
And because otherwise they're used to seeing it just from the border of the field, or even if they walk into it, it's still not a whole picture that they can get that way. So just being able to see those maps is something that really opens up their eyes to, like, okay, I have this much variability in this field. How can we do something about it?
Yeah, it's a whole different perspective. I know in some of the trainings that I've had for farmers, you know, we give them an opportunity to fly a drone. And once they get it up there and they see how easy it is to maneuver and everything, then they start thinking about different applications they could use it in. Like there was one time where a farmer mentioned that, oh, you know, I've got this one spot on my field that's always flooding, but it's hard to get to. And this would be a great, you know, great way to incorporate this. Cause I think there's definitely a lot of obstacles or barriers when folks haven't tried it yet. There's that, you know, fear of the unknown, especially, you know, with a drone, you know, they don't want to spend a bunch of money and then crash it their first time out. And so there's a lot of trepidation there. And so I think it's been really beneficial having some of these real basic courses where you just talk a little bit about some of the different ways it can be used and talk about some of the different drones that are out there and then just get them to fly. I mean, in the first couple minutes, they really, you know, they start, you know, you'll have one farmer who, you know, is kind of the leader and, you know, he's kind of the influential guy of the group and he'll get out there and he'll start flying. And then other people start being like, well, maybe I should try it. And then, you know, everybody's flown and they've all got this idea that, you know, they can do it too.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's such a great point as far as, like, you know, because these drones, of course, there's a lot of variability in how much they cost and what sensors they carry and so on. But even if you go on the cheaper side, you still don't just want to take the risk, right, of crashing on your first flight and without really knowing, I guess, how to do it. But it's amazing how newer drones are just so much easier and simpler to do that, right? It's pretty much almost an automated process. So having those people on the ground, extension agents and specialists really working with the growers to show them that today is really simple, right? You don't have to worry as much as you would maybe even 5 years ago.
Yeah. Well, and also I think some of the folks have, you know, they've purchased a drone maybe for their grandchild or their child, and they're kind of the lower quality drones. And those are the ones that are really difficult to kind of keep flying. And so they've got some experience with that. And they're like, well, there's no way I could do that on the farm. But then, you know, you get these others that are a little bit higher level, but they're still not super costly. And then they start thinking that, yeah, it is possible.
Awesome. So, you know, if we think from the drone side, we're collecting all this imagery, all this data, and then we want to help growers to use that for something, right? For something that can be beneficial for them. So really bridging this data with perhaps software or algorithms or, know, things that we can use this data to train and do something, learn something from it. So things, including things like machine learning and artificial intelligence, I guess that would be perhaps the next step of, okay, we have all this data. Now, how do we use this to make a decision, right?
Yeah.
So could you tell us a little bit about your experience with that as far as taking this data to the next level, as far as, you know, bringing AI into the picture and learning something from it that is more actionable?
Yeah, well, a good example that I've got is actually some work that I did with some Christmas tree growers that we have here in Tennessee. And one of the things that they were interested is being able to conduct inventory of the trees that they have left in their field. Because normally, you know, they just have to go out and walk and count and do all those kinds of things. And, you know, incorporating the drone into the system, and then also being able to use artificial intelligence to train a model to identify, you know, what's a Christmas tree and what's not a Christmas tree, but then also to be able to count how many are out there. That's something that's really useful. And we were working with some folks with some Christmas tree growers were locally, and we flew some fields and we got some drone images, and then we worked on training a model so that it could identify those and count them. And so that's kind of where we're at. We've been working with the University of Arkansas on some of that application of being able to do that.
Nice. That's a really nice example of really taking this data and using AI, right, to help the growers to be more efficient in some way. Awesome. So we talked about here as far as growers having this technology and this power within, I guess, their hands and being the ones driving this, but also this other component of the process, which is extension agents and how they also may play a role helping growers to do that. So what do you think of ways that extension agents have been using not just the sensors and the imagery mm-hmm. data, but also AI to assist either their growers or maybe even something that's larger than just a field or a farm?
I think that, in a lot of ways, since artificial intelligence is relatively new, there's a lot of folks that aren't very aware of the technology and how it can be used and how it can be beneficial to them in their jobs and in the field. I know some of the trainings that we've had this year, we've gone around throughout Tennessee and had some in-service trainings for agents. And there's a lot of folks that are interested in it, but they just don't know what to do or how to do it. And so we talked to them about some of the different large language models that are out there that you can use to ask questions or to create chat bots or things like that. And there's definitely some that are out there today that universities are employing to be able to answer some questions from stakeholders. And so the idea behind that is to really help reduce some of the time that agents spend answering questions in the office, and be able to help them get out into the field more and conduct some of those site visits and work one-on-one with the farmers that are out there. But yeah, there's definitely a whole host of different opportunities for using and incorporating that artificial intelligence. And it's still kind of a burgeoning sort of technology. So I'm sure there's a lot of new ways that they can be used. Some of the things that we talk about just plainly are, how they can use these to create a presentation. You can take a fact sheet and upload it, and then it'll create a presentation based upon the information that's in the fact sheet, and it'll pull in some images, either stock photos, or it'll use AI to create some photos for slides. And so, some of the things that they do on a regular basis can be made a little bit easier. Of course, there's always the importance of, checking it for accuracy and making sure that, what it's actually putting down there is correct information. But from what I've seen of a lot of the different types of models and programs that are out there, they seem to be pretty useful.
It's a really interesting example, right? So I know that here at the University of Georgia, we still are, and I'm just not aware of it, but we were looking into just what you said, looking for chatbots that could perhaps help some questions that initially a grower will probably look for their extension agent for that answer. Mm-hmm. But then instead they can go to that chatbot first, right? Of course, we're always going to have the human component in the process, but at least having that opportunity of asking something else, right? Kind of like asking Google, right? But instead of just being Google, it's something that actually gives you a full answer in a sentence rather than just a whole bunch of links.
The chatbots themselves, a lot of them are tied specifically to reference material so that they're pulling from extension publications and things like that to be able to answer the questions so that it's still, your research-based, unbiased information that we expect from the Cooperative Extension Program. But it's just done a little bit differently. It's not necessarily that human that's on the other end of it, but they're able to answer the questions when, the office is closed. And so that can be a huge benefit to folks still, and they can still use the extension system in that way.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's a great point, because it, it helps them to get the information in a more timely way, and also perhaps saves extension, like you were saying, extension agents time to do other very important tasks, right? To be out on the field with the growers rather than sitting in an office at answering a whole bunch of emails. Yeah. Awesome. So from your experience, what have you seen as some of the main barriers for growers to adopt, different technologies when it comes to precision ag or imagery or drones in general, or even chatbots? Like what have been some of the main barriers that you've identified?
I'd say one of the biggest things is really kind of the economics behind it. You know, some of this technology is really new, and so it's difficult for a farmer to be able to say, okay, I'm going to, purchase this new precision equipment for, X amount of dollars, but then what's my return on investment? So there's, we definitely need that, the research on that end of things to be able to say, hey, this is going to save you X amount of dollars or improve your yield X amount, so that they have a better understanding of what that is. And in a lot of cases, the technology is just too new to be able to have that information readily available. So I think that's definitely one of the barriers. And then I think another barrier is just the kind of the education or the demonstration component, being able to show a farmer how it would be incorporated into their system. Again, with any sort of new technology, you're going to have early adopters, and those early adopters can also be really beneficial because they can help teach their peers. That peer-to-peer learning is something that we like to engage in within the Cooperative Extension Program as well, where we have a field day at somebody's farm who's already incorporated that technology, and then they're really able to answer the questions and speak to, their fellow colleagues, other farmers, about, what it's looked like for him. How does it pencil out for their operation?
And I think that, something you said earlier that probably also plays a key role here is, as, new generations of farmers, right? As like the kids coming out of college, go back to the farm, and are coming equipped with all this knowledge and all this potential for implementing new things, there probably are some of the most important drivers of this, I would imagine, at the farm level, of just having, being familiar with it, being from a generation that you're already used to this, right? Rather than somebody that perhaps from a different generation that did not have access to these technologies because they didn't exist, and now they may have that level of being afraid of doing something, like you said, so expensive that you don't want to just take the risk.
Yeah, I think the technology piece is important for getting, a newer generation of farmers interested in farming and agriculture and doing, staying on the farm, but then they can apply, some of the things that they've learned and some of that newer technology and they might have an interest in that technology, and you don't necessarily have to be a computer scientist to be involved in technology. You can do that on the farm still, and I think that's really important, especially since the average age of the farmer is getting up there. I mean, we're into, like, I think it's maybe 59 or something like that is the average age, and so we definitely want to inspire the younger generation that, farming's cool. You can do a lot of great things with it and incorporate a lot of technology. There's definitely a lot of creativity that's out there that can be applied.
It's time for our famous three.
Explore the future of agriculture with KWS, a global leader in innovation and sustainable farming practices. Uncover the exceptional qualities of our hybrid rye, cultivating a legacy for a greener tomorrow. Visit kws.com/US for more information and for dealer locations. KWS, seeding the future since 1856.
Perfect. Well, if you are listening to this episode and you're enjoying our conversation as much as I am, make sure you drop us a like and share our episode with anyone else that you think may be interested in this great conversation with Jason. All right, Jason. So we're getting towards the latter part of our episode where I have the three questions that we ask every guest. So the first one that I want to kick off with is, what is your favorite agricultural or agronomy related resource that you found on your career that maybe you'd like to share with our audience?
Well, the one that I use on a fairly regular basis is really the Census of Agriculture. I know it's not, you know, a big book or, you know, anything flashy, but you know, especially coming from Extension, the Census of Agriculture really helps us to drill down into different counties and identify, you know, certain counties and, you know, what it is that they're producing, what their farmers look like, and really be able to kind of focus on certain programs that we want to provide based upon the data that we get from there. So it's helped me a lot in my career to just be able to have access to that and be able to look things up. I know some of our other faculty have used it as well for being able to plan programs and really make a difference and target specific areas that are going to have more need for certain programs and things as well. So that's the one that came to mind when I was thinking about that.
Perfect. Yeah, it's such a great resource for sure. And you know, I one of the classes that I teach, we basically use that resource to look into, you know, yield and planted area, harvested area of different crops at the county level. And I always enjoy teaching that part of it just because students get to see, you know, at a very specific level, which is the county level, how these crops are so important to our state, but any state in the U.S., where they are and how they evolved over time. And it's definitely a really great resource. Yeah, thanks for sharing that. All right, so our next question here is pretty much the same. So what would be your favorite resource, however, outside of the technical side of things? So, you know, if you have a known technical resource that you would like to share with us.
Sure. And this kind of fits with the Extension program leader work that I do. So there's a lot of different leadership books that are out there, and I've read a number of different ones to kind of help me with some of the leadership responsibilities that I have here at TSU. Probably my favorite one has been the book called Leaders Eat Last, and it's by Simon Sinek. And that's one that I think is really useful for thinking about servant leadership, being able to, you know, I've been here at TSU now for about 14 years or so. And in the program leader role, I get to see new faculty come in Extension, and I get to, you know, go through the whole onboarding process with them and kind of teach them the tricks of the trade with respect to how to manage everything that you've got going on, especially with Extension being able to get out into counties and do programs, but then also meet the requirements of promotion and tenure. And so it's been a you know, that's a good resource that I've enjoyed reading and utilizing through my leadership activities.
Awesome. So just to make sure I got this right, you said Leaders Eat Last is the name of the book.
Leaders Eat Last. Yep, that's right.
Nice. Well, thanks for sharing that. I have not read that one, but I'll certainly add to my reading list. Thanks for sharing it.
That's good. Yeah.
All right. So our last question here is, in your opinion and based on your experience, what type of skills or maybe skill sets have you observed on successful professionals?
Yeah, so I think one of the biggest ones is adaptability, because there are a lot of different things change all the time, and you know, especially with new technology, being able to adapt to that new technology and understand how it can be utilized. And you know, in extension specifically, you know, you'll have an extension agent or educator call you and ask you to, you know, provide a program or do some kind of a training. And so there's always different things on the horizon that, you know, you hadn't necessarily planned for, but they definitely come up and they're definitely important. And so being able to have that level of adaptability to do not necessarily do everything, but do as much as possible. I think that's something that, you know, if somebody has that, they're definitely going to be pretty effective in some of the things they do. And I think another skill is just kind of listening, being able to understand, you know, what's out there, and also being able to understand the needs of folks, whether it's the extension agents or the farmers or, you know, even, you know, what scientists are talking about in the literature, being able to keep a keep an ear to the ground to see, you know, what the new developments are going to be, anticipate some of the changes that might be coming. And I think that's another good attribute for somebody to have to be successful in this kind of a professional position.
All right. Well, thanks for sharing that. And with that, we wrap up our episode of today. So, Jason, I want to thank you for being with us here today. I really enjoyed our conversation and learned a lot from your experience using drones, imagery, and working so closely with those that really, really are the people we're serving as far as our growers and especially through the extension system with the agents as well. So thanks for sharing all that with us, and it was great to have you here.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I had fun.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with Elite Remote Talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.